From American Public Media, this is Celebrating Chopin. I'm Brian Newhouse. If you fly into Warsaw and head west, you come across countryside that rolls gently and is cut by small streams. This time of year, those streams are just starting to lose their icy cover. Along their banks stand willow trees that on foggy, late winter mornings will be draped with frost. In another month, they'll be heavy with the soft, green buds of spring. After about a half hour, you arrive at a little village, not much more than a crossroads of a dozen houses. This humble address is where one of the great geniuses of Western art, composer and pianist Frédéric Chopin, was born. His parents worked for a prominent family in town. Chopin's mother was their housekeeper, his father a tutor for the kids. The Chopins lived in an annex of the small manor home. Today, the living room floors of the manor are bare wood, the ceiling is low and crossed with wooden beams. On the white plaster walls are portraits of Chopin's parents and his two sisters. In the middle of this living room is Chopin's own piano, a beautiful dark brown instrument about 7 feet long. It was on this instrument that he composed dozens of his most beloved pieces, and where, this morning, on Chopin's 200th birthday, the American pianist Garrick Olson sat down to play.
Thank you.
The Polonaise in A Major by Chopin. You're listening to a recital given in Chopin's birthplace, a little village west of Warsaw in central Poland. We're celebrating the 200th birthday of this man who made magic at this very piano, and for any pianist ever since who has opened Chopin's music. Our soloist is Garrick Olson. One of the remarkable things, I think, about this incredibly special bicentennial recital is that Poland chose, out of all the pianists they could have picked worldwide, including dozens right from Poland, this American. Garrick Olson was the first American to win the International Chopin Competition. He did that back in 1970. And the Poles absolutely fell in love with Olson, and he's made dozens of trips back to Poland in the years since to play Chopin. Garrick has recorded every single piece that Chopin wrote, and perhaps more than any pianist today, when people think of Chopin, they think of this man born in New York. Garrick began his recital this morning with the Polonaise in A, sometimes known as the Military Polonaise. It was one of a pair of Polonaises published together as the Opus 40, and here's the other. Nothing military or brash about this moody, moonlit companion piece in C minor. Again, here is Garrick Olson at the composer's piano in recital this morning in the village where Chopin was born exactly 200 years ago. The Dark Beauties of the Polonaise in C Minor by Frédéric Chopin. You're listening to Celebrating Chopin from American Public Media. I'm Brian Newhouse, and this recital was given this morning, March 1st, and broadcast all across Poland by Polish radio, in a country that Garrick Olson says is Chopin crazy. This village, Zielazowa Wola, does get bragging rights as the composer's birthplace, which happened 200 years ago today. But when Chopin was 7 months old, the family moved to Warsaw, which is now about a half hour's drive to the east. That's where Frédéric grew up, and at 5 years old, started piano. Within a couple years, he was hailed throughout Warsaw as a second Mozart, and publishers were asking him for rights to pieces he was composing even then. He was treated like royalty by Warsaw. But as he grew up, he and his family would often leave the city and come back to visit family and friends at Zielazowa Wola, the village where he was born. There, in this manor home, he was always asked to play the piano, as the organizers for this Chopin bicentennial recital did to Garrick Olson, inviting him to pull up the bench next to Chopin's own instrument this morning. the Ballade No. 3 in A-flat by Chopin. Garrick Olson in recital recorded earlier today in Chopin's hometown. Chopin gets credit for inventing that term ballade as it applies to music. Some people think he was inspired by the poetry of a countryman. But Chopin for himself never said one way or another. And as far as we know, the poetry he was thinking of all came out of his fingers at this very keyboard. You got your 200 birthday candles all laid in, ready to put on the cake, right? You're listening to Celebrating Chopin from American Public Media. In case you're just tuning in, this concert was given this morning in Chopin's birthplace in Poland. Now, you don't hear any applause in this recital because there was no audience in the room where Garrick Olson sat down at Chopin's piano. The living room of this village manor house was only big enough to fit the piano, a couple of Polish radio producers, and a nervous piano technician who was standing by with his black bag in case Chopin's 1848 Pleyel piano succumbed to the power of one very big American, Garrick Olson. If you've ever seen Garrick in concert, you know he looks a little more like he was built for the backfield than a piano bench. He has got string-snapping power whenever he wants, some of which he unleashes in this E major scherzo of Chopin about a third of the way through. So, fingers crossed.
Thank you.
The Scherzo in E Major of Chopin. You're listening to Celebrating Chopin from American Public Media. I'm Brian Newhouse. Our soloist is Garrick Olson in this recital recorded earlier today in the hometown of Chopin in central Poland. A week ago, I got the chance to sit down with Garrick Olson a long way away from this little village at an excellent concert grand. Actually, we were on the stage of Orchestra Hall in Minneapolis. I asked Garrick to take me into the world of Chopin by demonstrating some of the basics, but also some of the charm of the pieces Chopin wrote. For instance, Chopin wrote lots of pieces he called mazurkas. But what is a mazurka?
The mazurka is a complicated bag of worms. Right away, because a mazurka is basically one of three kinds of dances in three. You know, Central European dances are all, you know, often waltzy. And we know, for example, in the famous Viennese waltz, if you play the Blue Danube, if it doesn't have what's called lilt, it sounds absolutely like the worst kind of bad band, you know.
Now, come on, that's how I play piano.
Anyway, you wanted to do... You want to be able to swing a little bit to it and feel your body moving. The single feature is that it's not one, two, three. Sometimes there's a lift after the second one with a big accent on the third. One, two, three. Except it would never be that waltzy. It's never repeated. Or sometimes there's a big accent on the second, depending on the dance. Now, Chopin, in his mazurkas, used no folk music, but he knew Polish folk music deeply. He wasn't just a city kid who thought about mazurkas. He actually spent summers in the country and heard mazurkas sung and danced. So, for example, in the second mazurka, the introduction has the famous bagpipes, with the accent not on one, which is more normal, but one, two, one, two. And then, of course, the right hand is what gives the magic. And then, of course, he varies it immediately. Now, the melody doesn't have the accent on the second beat, but it rests on the... So it doesn't go... It doesn't go just... It's not square. Chopin's almost never square, except when he's very square, which is almost never, and on purpose. So it has a kind of lilt inherent in it. So it was one... In other words, if the pianist's third beat comes too soon, then you don't have time to do one, two... That's what we call in music an accent of length, as well as...
Could these be, and were they, danced as well as listened to?
I don't think so. I mean, they may have been, and I'm sure they have been since then. And even, you know, we've danced waltzes in Les Sylphides and so on. And at least ballet dancers are able to dance Chopin waltzes, maybe. I think these were more evocations. Certainly, it was often observed about the waltzes that these are not waltzes for dancing unless the dances are all contessas or something.
Garrick Olson at a modern 9-foot Steinway in Minneapolis last week. But this morning, March 1st, Garrick sat down at an 1848 French instrument that Chopin owned and wrote lots of pieces on. And Garrick played this mazurka in C-sharp minor on Chopin's 200th birthday.
Thank you.
The Mazurka in C-sharp minor of Chopin, Garrick Olson, in recital recorded earlier today in Chopin's hometown. Again, I want to bring you a quick bit of an interview with Garrick at the Orchestra Hall Minneapolis Piano a few days ago. With the occasion of Chopin's 200th birthday coming up, I wanted to find out through this pianist, who's made it his life's work studying Chopin, what is the magic that this composer created? How did he do that?
He transmogrified everything. I mean, the mazurkas are everything from that hurdy-gurdy to an almost atonal introduction to the B-flat minor mazurka.
Interesting. Talk about then how he, in that opening passage, I didn't know what era, what century we're in, how was he the revolutionary, the visionary who was pushing harmonies and melodies in places that people in the 1840s just didn't do?
Well, that's exactly, well, you just said it better than I can. he pushed all of Western harmony forward. He was a strict classicist who contained his demons, although he was very demonic and very emotional. Yet he was a harmonic wild child. His harmonies were so wild that they actually offended. Don't forget, we've had the Rite of Spring 100 years ago, and we've had wilder music since then. We're no longer shocked. But at the time, he really made very bad decorum with his wild harmonies. And as a matter of fact, when he got to Paris as a young virtuoso in his early 20s, he was the toast of all the European capitals. And the great teacher and pianist Moschel said, "Young man, come study with me a few years. I'll get rid of the kinks in your playing and the kinks in your compositions, or the faults or whatever." Here's a wild one, which we don't remember how wild is. In the G minor ballade, there's a passage after the introduction in which there's a glaring dissonance which then resolves. It's magical even today. It's very evocative. It's a terrible stab to the heart, this dissonance.
Decades before Wagner was doing the same thing.
Absolutely. And there are editions in the late 19th century which corrected it, and often with the footnote saying, surely such an elegant, refined composer as Chopin could not have meant such a brutal dissonance. Oh, it surely must have been a slip of the pen.
You're so they, kidding.
They edited, they Baudelaireized it to this. And, of course, we now recognize how foolish that is. But he was considered offensive. Not offensive. Those things were still considered shocking in the late 19th century. The Wagner connection is brilliant because Liszt introduced Wagner to Chopin's music in the 1840s, around the time of Lohengrin, I think. I'm not sure. And there's a marvelous letter in which Cosima, Liszt's daughter, Wagner's wife, writes that there was one particular prelude that Liszt played, which modulates a great deal, that Wagner was obsessed with and wanted to hear it four or five times in a row. You could say that Tristan is the natural outgrowth of Chopin's sliding chromaticism in a way. I mean, he took that slide. Look at one of the most famous preludes. Just listen to this left hand. Playing it too fast just to show it, but it's almost like flesh melting off bones.
Yeah, I mean, it's sliding down by half steps.
Just by half steps in various voices. Yeah. Of course, the moment you say that, you have to remember that Beethoven wrote some, and Schubert wrote some pretty astounding chromatic stuff too, but not in this kind of continuous style. This is one feature, of course, of the early Romantics, of which Chopin was perhaps the most remarkable, although he had some remarkable company in, you know, in Schumann, Liszt, Mendelssohn, Berlioz, Wagner. In the classic era, we had discrete things which then aggregated to form pieces. I mean, once again, this is a gross exaggeration. Chopin starts giving you the endless line idea. You know, if you take Field's first B-flat Nocturne number 5, with the same Alberti bass model as Chopin, It sounds a little bit Chopin-esque, but it has still a sort of a classic feel to the melody. The melody is obviously...
It's quite proper.
It's quite proper, mm-hmm. whereas Chopin's first nocturne, which was considered morbid by Field, actually is by comparison. But notice how he hides the joy and makes it go on and on and on and on.
Garrick Olson at a modern 9-foot Steinway in Minneapolis last week. Garrick Olson played one last piece this morning for all of Poland to enjoy in his Polish radio broadcast at the composer's own instrument, La Polonaise in A-flat. Thank you. Polonaise in A-flat by Frédéric Chopin. The soloist, Garrick Olson, performing in the little village to the east of Warsaw, a town called Zielezowa Wola. And the music of Chopin on the occasion of the composer's 200th birthday today. Tonight, Garrick continues his very busy recent schedule. He'll be on stage at the Warsaw National Opera House playing with the Warsaw Philharmonic Chopin's beautiful E minor piano concerto. Busy, busy man in this Chopin season. Thanks very much to our colleagues at Polish Radio who recorded and sent us this exclusive audio this morning. Thanks also to engineer Rob Byers of American Public Media. Keep the fire extinguisher handy in your own Chopin celebration tonight. After all, 200 candles do create a lot of heat. A little encore, the Waltz in E-flat by Chopin. Garrick Olson again at the piano. Happy Chopin's birthday, everybody. I'm Brian Newhouse. Thanks for tuning in.
American Public Media.